Hello, and welcome to another edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. I am Jasmine Smith, and I'm not here with Robert Connie today. I have a special guest here with me. Today on My Old Kentucky Podcast, we are going to be talking about California's state-funded ban on travel. And with me today, I have Andrew Swan. Andrew is actually my significant other, but I didn't have him on the show just because he's my boyfriend. I had him on the show because he is a student at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville, and a lot of his grad school research has been about LGBTQ policy. And so that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today with this California ban on state-funded travel. Andrew, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So last Friday, news broke that California has restricted state-funded travel to 4 states, and Kentucky is one of them, and that's why we're talking about a California law today. So the reason they have chosen these 4 states is because of laws that California officials find to be discriminatory against LGBTQ persons. So what is the ban? The ban comes from a bill that was passed in California in January of this year called AB 1887. And it's not new. California has already had this restriction with Kansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Tennessee, and now they have added Kentucky, Texas, Alabama, and South Dakota. So it started with a state-funded travel restriction with states where they had laws where service could be denied because of sexual identity or orientation, and certainly North Carolina was a part of this list because of their bathroom bill. And Andrew, can you remind the listeners what the bathroom bill in North Carolina was?
Yeah, so when we're talking about the North Carolina bathroom bill, we're talking about House Bill 2, which has a couple of other kind of regulations, but it kind of, the thing it's become...
Became the name, yeah, the bathroom bill.
Right, the thing it became most notorious for was that it wanted to require basically people to have to use the bathroom of their quote-unquote biological sex. So people saw it as specifically targeting people who are transgender.
Right. So that is why North Carolina made the list, and other states that made the list were passing bills that were related to gay adoption. And so with Kentucky, what law are they talking about? We don't have a bathroom bill. Why are they enacting this ban against us? Our law that they are saying is discriminatory is Senate Bill 17. And that bill states that no recognized religious or political student organization is hindered or discriminated against in the ordering of its internal affairs, selection of leaders and members, defining of doctrines and principles, in resolving of organizational disputes in the furtherance of its mission, or in its determination that only persons committed to its mission should conduct these activities. So that was a lot of words. Andrew, can you kind of sum up what SB 17 does?
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't know. You're the lawyer. Yeah. But so kind of, I mean, the layman speak of SB 17 is that groups and organizations basically can define rules for admittance, kind of. So, like, they can say, like, our group embraces these certain values, and because of those values, we would not want certain types of people to join, more or less. So the reason that SB 17 has been specifically talked about is that people have said, well, this means that if a group says, we don't want, you know, LGBTQ people to join our group, you know, that's discriminatory, that would allow for groups that are discriminatory to exist, and two, would also potentially restrict students at schools from joining, like, certain organizations, more or less.
Okay, so what the sponsor of this bill said about it was, for example, if students at a school want to have a Bible study group, that would be fine under my bill. I think that they would welcome homosexuals to their groups as long as the homosexuals understand that both the Old and New Testament say that homosexuality is a sin. Yikes!
Yeah, so
what do you think about that quote?
I mean, that quote kind of highlights a couple of, I'll say, problems.
Sure.
So I think kind of one of the biggest kind of criticisms of this bill itself is that it's a law that has been written to, quote-unquote, fix a problem that doesn't exist. Like, it's really kind of a straw man argument. Let's go with his example. If a group of students want to hold a Bible study and they're kind of more on the conservative end of Christianity that holds that being gay is a sin, you know, the gender that you're assigned at birth is a gender that you should live your life as, somebody who is gay or trans probably doesn't want to associate with that group anyway.
Great point.
In the first place. And so in a different interview, Robinson also kind of defended the bill and said this is what 99% of people want, and it's, and then something along the lines of, it's unfortunate that like the 1% of people who don't want this are creating problems for us. That statement's really kind of also dubious about people from 2014. Shows that most American adults, and even growing numbers of people who are Christian, are accepting of gay people. And even within more conservative Protestant populations, like the number of people who say that they are okay with people being gay, those numbers keep increasing over time. Also in Kentucky, we, again, kind of further deconstructing this 99% argument, in Kentucky there's already a bunch of cities with fairness ordinances that provide local protections to LGBTQ people, since as a state we don't have provisions for gender identity or sexual orientation within our statewide civil rights laws. So
right, so we can have local laws that within a city we can protect those things.
Right, so like obviously like you would probably, as you would think, Louisville and Lexington have those. But there's also several other smaller towns, Covington, Danville, Frankfort, Moorhead, Vico, and Midway all have.
Vico.
Yeah, I don't know where Vico is.
I remember there was some kind of like TV special about Vico having a fairness ordinance. And I think it's way out east, maybe.
Yeah. Shout out to Vico, Kentucky. I'm going to look you up on a map as soon as we're done here. And there's ongoing talks and pushes in Bowling Green as well to get a fairness ordinance passed. So this is something that is being talked about like in many pockets of the state. And then of course a lot of our big employees within the state, not just in Louisville and Lexington, but like statewide, also ban sexual orientation discrimination through their company policies. So Toyota, Ford, people that operate, you know, really big car plants in here. Of course, University of Kentucky and University of Louisville both do. Yum Brands, UPS, a lot of these big employers already have provisions in place within their own company policies that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation.
So basically, in summary here, maybe Al Robinson was off with his 99% when it comes to SB 17.
I'm going to be generous and say yes. His numbers are slightly off.
Okay, so SB 17, that's the law that California says we are not funding state travel to Kentucky because of this law. But what does state-funded travel mean? What kind of things might that include? It's pretty simple and pretty broad. The state is saying that they won't pay for state business in those states. That includes a lot of things. Like, I think where it has a big impact is traveling to a conference. You know, Kentucky has several big conference centers in Louisville, Lexington, Owensboro actually has this really nice, huge conference center now. The state of California won't pay for their employees to travel to Kentucky. There are a few exemptions in the law. Tax auditing is one of those. Law enforcement, they want law enforcement to be able to go out of state to investigate if they need to. And then certain training, there's certain training events that might be exempted. But what everyone really wants to know about this law is, what about sports? That's something that everybody's worried about. What about athletics? So this could mean that public universities wouldn't go to these states for sporting events. This would mean USC couldn't play Texas in football. UCLA won't come to Rupp Arena to play anymore. U of L is also supposed to host the National Cross Country Championships this year. So that could be a big issue with the law that people are actually worried about.
Mm-hmm.
So far, California's been asked about it. The California Department of Justice says, basically, we don't know. What they really said was, this matter's pending and an opinion has not been issued yet. So it seems that we don't know how that's going to apply. The way that people seem to think this might work is that current contracts will be honored. So like tournaments and bowl games would be encompassed in that because they're already a current contract that they have with the NCAA. So maybe U of L's cross-country championships might be safe. Or if UCLA was planning on coming to Rupp again and already had a contract, which I don't believe is the case anymore, they could still come, but anything that's not already contracted for, they presumably would not be playing here.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Fisher wrote a letter to the California Attorney General to ask Louisville to be exempt from the travel ban due to its inclusivity and perfect 100 Human Rights Committee scorecard. And then Jim Gray followed suit and did the same thing, and he posted his letter on Twitter. So what do you think about these mayors asking to be exempt from it?
I mean, it makes sense. Like, you know, Louisville and Lexington are two cities that, generally speaking, are probably more progressive on the political scale and their policy kind of things than the rest of the state. And I mean, we'll get into this more, but it also makes economic sense for them as well to try and be like, hey, like, we're cool, so you could still come see us, maybe? So, yeah, because right. Tourism is a big deal for both of these cities.
I've seen some people upset about this, though, and say one of two things. Your state could just not have this law. They don't really have any control over that,
right,
though.
Right, they're mayors.
And why don't you just oppose the ban outright instead of asking for your city to be exempt? I don't really know what to think about that. Even if they did oppose the ban, it's not like they have any effect on what California is going to do. But that's the criticism that people are giving Mayor Fisher and Mayor Jim Gray.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, you could say that having a fairness ordinance is already kind of in opposition to this as well.
Right.
And, you know,
that's a good point.
Their mayors, unfortunately, they can obviously endorse and use their platform to, you know, advocate for certain policies or advocate against certain policies, but, you know, they don't get to actually be on the floor voting when we go to session for the state.
So. Exactly. So, what you mentioned, Andrew, is that Mayor Fisher and Mayor Gray definitely have an interest in asking to be exempt because of the economic effect that it might have. So what kind of economic effect would this ban have, do you think?
So if we're looking at the travel ban, you know, if we're talking about travel into the state, whether that is for business or personal reasons, all of that kind of falls under the umbrella of tourism when we're looking at kind of like different parts of the economy.
Okay.
And so actually the Kentucky Department of Tourism released their 2016 annual report. And tourism is a big deal in Kentucky. It's really actually the third largest industry behind automobile manufacturing and healthcare.
Really? So where does bourbon fall on that list?
Probably under tourism.
Oh, okay.
So
that makes sense.
When you actually look at their report, they actually break Kentucky into like kind of 9 different regions. And one of those regions is called Bourbon Horses and History. And then there's another okay. region called Bluegrass Horses, Bourbon, and Boone. So bourbon is in 2 of the different regions.
Okay.
Yeah, they definitely cover the bourbon. So actually, so in 2016, the Kentucky Department of Tourism said that the tourism industry in Kentucky generated $14.5 billion in terms of economic impact. So that's an increase of more than 5% from last year. So tourism is growing in Kentucky. They also said that tourism supported 192,000 jobs within the state of Kentucky, and that provided $3.2 billion in wages.
That seems pretty high.
Right. And so we talked about, like, you know, why would Mayor Fisher, like, specifically say, like, hey, leave Louisville out of this, please. Of that $14.5 billion number, Louisville accounted for over $3.4 billion of it. So a pretty big chunk, more than a fifth,
right,
is Louisville. And of that 192,000 jobs, 27,000 of those were employees in Louisville. I don't have the Lexington numbers right off the top of my head, but Lexington, you can probably also guess, were also significant in terms of both their tourism contributions and the amount of people they employ in the tourism industry.
Okay, so we're saying tourism is a pretty big industry in Kentucky, the third largest, but I think the question is, what kind of effect might this have? I think the only way we really know how to compare that is how have other bills like this affected other states? Like, for example, HB2 in North Carolina, Indiana's RFRA, things like that.
Right. The two you mentioned are the two kind of biggest ones that get brought up
right.
in terms of this, because they were not the first, but probably the two biggest high-profile bills in recent history. So the RFRA Act in Indiana, again, for both of these bills, numbers are kind of hard to find. Some articles cite estimates, some articles cite hard facts. So there's an article in Forbes from January of last year, 2016, that basically claimed that the RFRA Act had cost Indianapolis $60 million in terms of tourism income. So that was from events either pulling out or events that had been there saying, we're not going to come back anymore. The numbers for HB2 in North Carolina are honestly really kind of all over the place. So a senator in North, like a state senator for North Carolina, or I'm sorry, it wasn't the state senator, it was the lieutenant governor for North Carolina, had made some statements recently where he said, you know, people say HB2 is costing us a lot of money, but that's not really true. It's actually only like 0.1% of our GDP. That is true when you're looking at how much revenue you can prove and that has been lost since the time that HB2 was filed. So PolitiFact basically like took that and like ran the numbers and basically found that, yeah, around lost $500 million of economic impact in North Carolina since the passage of HB2, which sounds like a lot of money. Obviously, it's bigger than that $60 million impact.
Sure.
But North Carolina's GDP is really big, and that $500 million economic impact is only 0.1%. But kind of the bigger numbers that get tossed around is when people start to kind of estimate, like, going forward. So they say, like, okay, you've lost this much money, like, that we can prove with hard numbers so far. How is it going to, like, stretch out and keep going? So the Associated Press did kind of a report or estimated report looking at the potential lost income, and they peg that number at $3.76 billion. They're basing their estimate on loss of potential employment. They bring up PayPal. One of the big things around HB2 is PayPal was going to bring, like, a call center to North Carolina. And when HB2 got passed, PayPal pulled out because it was against their, you know, corporate policy. And so the AP actually estimated that that was a loss of $2.6 billion to the state economy.
Oh, wow.
Just PayPal pulling out. The NAACP is also boycotting holding events in North Carolina. We know the NCAA has decided not to host events there while they figure out stuff about HB2. And the NBA pulled out. They had All-Star Weekend planned for Charlotte.
Right, that's
and they moved
right.
that. So yeah, the AP says when we look at that, we're estimating $3.76 billion of potential overall lost revenue going forward. They even say in this article that they think their tally is an underestimate because when they were building this estimate, they said we only really included data that we could get from businesses, state, local officials regarding projects that were officially canceled or relocated because of HB2. And they only counted business projects if the Associated Press could basically prove through public records or interviews that specifically HB2 was why they pulled out. So
they can't just say, oh, this business left.
They're
actually trying to prove that
right.
it was because of this.
And so they give an example. They say, okay, Lionsgate was doing a TV production thing in Charlotte and they pulled out. People have kind of speculated that it might be because of HB2, but no one has specifically said from Lionsgate, or there's never been on record in an interview, we left because of HB2.
Okay.
So that number is really high, and they're even saying that, like, we're not even counting everything that we probably could, but we want to make sure that we can base this number as much on cold, hard facts. So all of that being said, it's really hard to estimate the kind of economic impact that this will have on Kentucky. One, because obviously, like I said, a lot of these numbers that get thrown around, it's really hard to, like, lock down cold, hard numbers because a lot of it comes down to, like, estimating and forecasting.
Right.
And going back and, like, well, this event that used to be here made this much money the last time it was here. But, you know, people who are really into, like, facts and statistics say that, like, you know, you can make an estimate, but you can't definitively say this thing that made $50 million last year will make $50 million this year.
Absolutely.
There's also kind of, so this is a weird argument, but you could also kind of say that, like, SB 17 isn't nearly as severe as something like HB2 or the RFRA Act. So maybe there won't be as much of an outcry from, like, private businesses and stuff like that surrounding SB 17. That SB 17 is not as far reaching. Like we said, it's only student organizations. It's not like public restrooms and stuff like that.
Right. And I don't think there's really been any outcry about this bill from private entities, you know, and this ban only extends to state funded travel.
Yeah.
So we don't really know. I don't think it would have a huge effect outside of that, but we just don't really know how much will be impacted by the state funded
yeah.
ban.
And if I had to guess, this is me, you know, kind of completely guessing here, but I would think that that might be part of why Senate Republicans are okay with something like SB 17. But when Rick Nelson from Middlesbrough filed those two bills in the past session, one of which was basically a bathroom bill saying that when you used restrooms in publicly funded spaces like state schools or governmental buildings, you had to use bathrooms that corresponded again to your quote unquote biological mm-hmm. sex. And like Matt Bevin has been on record being like, I don't want to touch those with a 10-foot pole.
Right. He even said, like, people know where to go to the bathroom. I don't
right.
care about that.
He has a really funny quote where it's like, can you find me somebody who's had problems doing their business in Kentucky?
Goofy. And we talked about that. We did a show about potential Republican policies that could be passed in Kentucky. And we talked about a bathroom bill. Mm-hmm. And then it did not pass. And
it didn't even go up for a vote.
It didn't even go up for a vote.
Yeah,
so that's good.
They did not
good.
Want this to even go up for vote. Like, they didn't want to touch it. They didn't want to mess with it. Which, again, yeah, good. It's good. But yeah, so it's probably fair to say there's going to be some sort of economic impact, but because of kind of the unique areas that SB 17 is looking at, you know, I'm hesitant to ever talk about things being more or less discriminatory, but because it's a more right. kind of focused on a niche population in terms of like, you know, school groups than something more broad ranging like RFRA and HB2. Yeah. So it's really hard to say. And also, I mean, this thing that Louisville and Lexington do filing for an exemption is pretty unique. I went back and looked to see, like, did Charlotte try and do something like this? And I really couldn't find anything.
Okay.
Because Charlotte in North Carolina is kind of in a similar situation to Louisville and Lexington, where they're the very progressive city in a more red state.
Right. And this is also sort of different because in those situations, that was just different entities making the decision not to go to that state, you know, the NCAA, the NBA. But this is an actual law in California that's right. banning state-funded travel. So this is different, and you would presumably need that exemption if you want them to be able to travel to your city. I don't really know how that will work out for Louisville and Lexington right now. It just kind of seems like a plea, like, right. please don't come to our cities. Have conferences
money,
here.
Money, please.
Right, exactly. So just in general, what do you think about this California ban? Do you think that progressive states enacting laws like this is a good thing that could put pressure on states that are passing discriminatory laws? Like, what do you think about the law in general?
It's complicated. So, you know, on one hand, I think it's nice, especially when state policymakers go on record. And, you know, for me, for someone who believes very strongly in the expansion of civil rights protections for LGBTQ people, it's nice to see a policymaker go on record and say, no, discriminatory policies are bad and we don't stand for them. But when you look at doing sort of like statewide economic boycotts, the people who generally are hurt the most by, you know, economic practices are the people who are already marginalized and oppressed.
Exactly.
And when you look especially at, you know, transgender folks are much more likely to face discrimination in the workplace that either results in them quitting or results in them being denied promotions or, you know, being made to feel unsafe at work. So trans people are much more likely than cis people who are not transgender, to be unemployed or to be low income. And so sometimes when you're looking at these statewide economic sanctions, you're not really doing anything to the privileged people who already have money. Like, they're going to be okay. And sometimes these sanctions end up hitting people who you were trying to support and trying to stand up for and trying to protect. I know there are a lot of people, when the RFRA stuff was going on, and a lot of groups were saying, boycott everything from Indiana. I personally knew a few people who identified as gay that had a local business out of Indiana, and they're like, please don't boycott us
right.
while you're boycotting Indiana, because, like, obviously we are gay people who own a small business and we rely a lot on shipping products outside of our state. And if you go to a competitor, you're basically putting a gay-owned business out of business by trying to stand up for us. So sometimes this stuff can get murky. You know, it seems like good intentions, but you sometimes have to look at how those intentions kind of end up doing impact.
I think you summed that up really perfectly. So basically, this ban is pretty complicated. There are pros and definite cons that Andrew has explained associated with it. We don't know how it's going to affect our state. We don't know how it's going to affect Louisville and Lexington. But I'm guessing we'll hear more on this to come. Specifically, I'm sure we'll hear about the Louisville and Lexington exemptions or any kind of sporting events. I think that's what people have been concerned about
right,
as well,
yeah.
Because let's be real, this is Kentucky and mm-hmm. we are a basketball state. So yeah, that is the California state-funded travel ban. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on and explaining that to us and providing your insight about it.
Yeah.
Last but not least, we have a couple quick hits. The first one, Andy Beshear, our attorney general, is filing lawsuits against drug manufacturers, distributors, and retailers who have allegedly contributed to the opioid crisis. And the second one, Senator Mitch McConnell's vote on the healthcare bill was postponed. And as of today, we're hearing that he is trying to send a revised version to the Congressional Budget Office as soon as Friday. So that will not be the last we hear of Mitch McConnell and the terrible healthcare bill. Thank you for listening. And you can find our podcast on pretty much any podcasting app of your choice, iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. You can like our Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter at MyOldKYPod, And you can find Andrew on Twitter at Swandre3000.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of Twitter feed than you may be used to by following Jasmine and Robert, but...
It's true. If you have any questions about what we talked about today for Andrew, or questions about U of L sports or tabletop games, you can hit him up on Twitter. Thanks for listening.